For sure.
What up, brother?
My man, big.
What up, dog? How you doing, man?
Pleasure, brother.
Yes, sir.
What's up, Rome? What's up, man? How you doing?
Respect.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate y'all.
Have a seat,
welcome,
man.
Welcome.
Yes, sir.
You know, we came to your stomping grounds. We had XL Sports
right.
at their facility. So, you know, we had to come visit you.
Right.
You know, I mean, I would rather come visit you in Vegas. But,
yeah.
You know, maybe when you ball out, we'll catch you there in the offseason.
Right. Yeah. No, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, man.
But I got you, bro. I get your number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Welcome to the Pivot, man. It's Freddie T. I'm RC. That's Chan. We're with Rome Odunze, or as they call him, Rome. Odonzio, or whatever. Bro, they mess my dog name up
every time.
All the time.
Every time.
I do have a question, though. Yeah. How much have you brushed up on your piloting skills since now you know in order to be an NFL wide receiver, you have to be able to fly a plane?
I know. The questions they ask at the combine are funny, man. They get crazier and crazier, I feel like, every year. But, man, I've been on them flight simulators. I'm like, man, I'm thinking about it. If I'm in an emergency, I can handle that. So
you going to land a plane?
That man said every soul will perish.
Get the fuck out of here, man. You ain't landing no goddamn plane.
Bruh, but I really been thinking about it, like, since they asked me that, because I'm like, okay, if it's, like, a commercial plane, like, with jet engines, no, I'm not landing that. Like, there's too many buttons. But, like, if it's, like, a propeller plane, you could land a propeller plane. Like a Cessna, you could land a propeller plane. Like, they could give you instructions and everything. You could land a propeller plane.
So he'll get over air traffic control, right? Tell him, hey, man, one of the propellers is out.
Rome coming in.
Clear the runway.
So on the other side of that, another one of your combine experiences was you stayed a long time trying to get the L drill correct. One, have you figured it out? Do you now know how to not step over the line?
Right.
What were you doing that they wouldn't count your times?
They were saying, so when I was coming off of my second break, coming back from the line that I started from, right, going around that first cone, that first turn, they were saying I was stepping over it, which for me is like, I don't really get it, because if I'm stepping over that cone, like, it's a pretty tall cone. It would be pretty Jurassic if I was stepping over the cone. But so they were saying you can't go over it, right? You got to go around it. So they were saying I was stepping over it. They said that, like, the first two reps, and those were my best reps. Mind you, like, this is after a whole day of, like, the routes, the 40, like, you warming up for 40, then you warming up for routes. Then I did the other agility drills. So, man, I was tired, and I was, those first two reps, they said I was doing wrong. I have it down, like, the L, like, that's one of my babies. Like, I feel like I'm smooth with it. So when I was doing it, I was cool, but they was just saying I was doing it wrong. So
why was it so important to keep trying? Because everybody pays attention to the 40, you know. They understand the routes, watch you catch the ball. Like, I watch you play in person because my son played at Arizona State, so I've been at your games. Like, everybody's seen you play. The film doesn't lie. You run 4-4. Why was it so important to you to stay longer for the L drill? A drill that, honestly, people don't even ever talk about.
Right.
You know, and you'll have an opportunity to do it at Pro Day.
Yeah, well, for me, it was like when I came to the combine and I told everybody, like, I was there for the whole experience, you know, like, you know, I know guys, you know, a lot of guys sit out nowadays, especially like top end, you know, picks and guys that are going higher in the draft. But for me, it's like, you know, for guys like y'all who went through the combine, like, and for me to come in and compete, you know, against y'all and compete against the guys that are coming after me, like, I wanted to do everything so that my numbers are on the table. So, like, you know, Rome Odunze, wherever, regardless of where my career goes after this, right, at this point in time, like, he was doing this in the L, like, and it's a statistic that you can, you know, compare against everybody else. So when I was there, I was, you know, determined on doing everything just to be like, you know, this was what I did that day, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's always there in time, right, for people to go back and look at. So for me, it was just, you know, just keeping true to my word.
But, bro, being out there, the video's funny. I enjoy it. I like you. Your ass is out there.
Sit down.
You're the only one out there, and everybody's sitting there in the video. Like, everybody's like, he won't go off. He won't get off the field.
Right.
Like, at some point, did that hit you? Like, bro, why the fuck am I doing this?
For sure. For sure. When I was, like, on my sixth, seventh rep, on my sixth rep, I had a good rep. And I don't think it, I think I hit the last cone coming around the corner. And then I sat down, and I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, why am I still here? Like, I was going at it for a minute before anybody even came over, right? And I didn't realize that everybody was leaving. Like, I knew a lot of kids wasn't doing the L drip.
Bro,
I looked behind them like, oh, I'm the only one here. Like, right. And then the camera started coming over. Like, I didn't expect none of that. I was just trying to finish my combine. So, like, and then they turned it into this big story, right? That's how it goes. But for me, I was just like, man, I'm just trying to finish my drill. Like, I'm just so, but yeah, my 6th, 7th rep, I was like, man, I should just do it at pro day. Like,
they're gonna, someday they're gonna look back at that. Right. You know, you're gonna do something special and they're gonna look back. They're gonna talk about determination, not quitting, right, and that whole experience. So, they gonna be a special day for you. The whole, we did a show about the combine experience. We kind of talked about, you know, our experiences not too long ago. And your experience, the entire combine, not just the L drill.
Yeah.
How tedious of a process was it to you? Like, what did you enjoy? Right. What did you dislike? Right. How was that for you?
I liked it overall. I mean, the most tedious process or part of it, I would just say, is like all the waiting and like all the evaluation that you're doing. Like, you know, every room you walk into, you're like, okay, am I, you know, my sit up straight, or, you know, make sure I'm talking clear and coherently, and, you know, and do I know ball? Making sure, hey, I know that player, you know, rewind it in your mind for the next meet or whatever. And then all the medical stuff, like, y'all know how it is. It's a little weird, like, you know, yeah, like they're all just kind of surrounding you. It's just like, you know, you just piece of meat, they put you in a room and like, you know, all like going through your medical history. It's a little weird, but that process of it was weird and a little tedious, just because you waiting from room to room, or from, you know, from x-ray to MRI to CT scan or whatever. So that process was weird. I enjoyed the interviews because that's fun. Like, you actually get to talk to coaches and stuff who know ball, and they get to know you and you get to know them. And then, like, being on the field was super fun. Like, that was the best part, because, you know, you finally, like, you know, went through all those meetings. That's like the last thing you do. So, being together with all the athletes, like, that was the best part for me, just being around like a bunch of elite guys that are going into the league, right? Like, to be around them, to be able to, like, you know, just interact with them, like, that was a tremendous experience. But overall, it was cool.
Right, for sure.
We all start this sport for different reasons. Your father is Nigerian, and your grandparents came here with little to nothing to build a life for you. You moved from Utah young to Las Vegas. Your favorite player is, like, not a favorite player that a lot of people pick.
Right.
Right? He's the first true special teamer to get into the Hall of Fame. Talk a little bit about that fandom and how he got you into ball.
I was so young, so I never even, like, had, like, a clicking moment when I was like, I want to play football. My mom always tells me stories like, I was just done with soccer. Like, I didn't want to play soccer. And then I was just like, I want to play football. But I think it was, like, in the middle of that was me watching this Devin Hester highlight. And it was Lil Wayne on the track. It was Catch Me If You Can. Like, dude was going crazy. And I would watch that highlight probably over 1,000 times. Like, and I was just so fascinated with it. Like, you know, my family wasn't, like, watching football every Sunday. Like, that's not really how we were. I don't even know what kind of draw me to that. I never, at that age, I didn't know that my pops played football growing up, like, in high school either. So it was just like, I don't know, I guess something was in me that I just was kind of drawn to the sport. And he really inspired that Devin Hester in me, just because, you know, when you turn on his tape, it's like, boy, like,
right,
that Lil Wayne on the track, I was like, oh, boy, I got to do some of that.
Yeah. Did you know he outran a cheetah?
He outran a cheetah?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They did make the cheetah run the shuttle. Like, they made it an intellectual race.
It was,
like, the cheetah had to touch the line.
It was 120 yard.
Right.
And it was like a full gasser. So it was boom, 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 boom. He outran the cheetah. The fact is, he outran the cheetah.
But he didn't.
Your favorite player outran
the
cheetah.
He outsmarted a cheetah. Who's going to tell the cheetah to
turn
around?
Don't do that, man. Just let him have this one.
All right? let him have it, baby.
Let
him have it.
Bro, what's the name? Because RC brought up the Nigerian background. Your name is very...
Yeah.
You know, I know it means something.
Oh,
you know, like, you know what I'm saying? You know your name means something. What's your name?
Yeah, it means King's Ivory. King's Ivory. Yeah, Odunze. You know, back home, my grandfather is... like one of 50 back home. He's one of 50 kids, and his father was
one of 50.
Yeah,
from one daddy.
From one daddy.
Boy, you better wrap it up.
Hey, you got a point.
Your granddaddy made 50.
Yeah, he 3 years deep into a relationship. You get lazy.
I saw him laying on the bed with the fucking sushi and the soy sauce. I saw the picture.
Yeah, roam. Yeah, you get lazy after 3 years.
What's that about, my man? What does it mean? I know it means, like, that stuff means something.
It means everything. Like, you know, my pops, my that side of the family, like Nigerian, my heritage, like, it's something that really drives me to, you know, keep doing what I'm doing. Just because, you know, that's where you come from, and especially, like, you know, African Americans sometimes don't often know, you know, where they come from. So for me, I feel super blessed that I know where I come from. I know, like, the village that my grandpa, you know, grew up in. So for me, it's about honoring them and, you know, coming over here to America with nothing in your pocket, like, and doing and having your grandson, like, on this stage, like, I just feel like we've been tremendously blessed, and it's my duty to, you know, keep uplifting the name, keep uplifting my grandfather for all that he's done with my grandmother as well, and all those who came before. So, yeah, something I hope to get back to Nigeria at some point. You know, this football life keeps you busy, but yeah, it means everything to me, man. It's an honor.
Your last name Nigerian, and your first name, you say your father, in fascination with the Roman Empire and all of that other stuff.
Yeah.
That's why he named you Rome?
Yeah, yeah, he did. He's a big kind of history buff. Like, he's a type he could, you know, from any time period, like, oh, yeah, this, he was doing this, or this philosopher this. So his mind's super, super interesting, super intelligent dude. So, yeah, I think he was just fascinated with the Roman Empire, you know, all that they were able to accomplish, you know, their influence on society that, you know, has carried on for generations. I think they thought was very interesting. So, yeah, I appreciate it. I thought it was a cool name. Yeah.
It's a dope name, yeah, for sure.
A lot of times when we speak to people who understand their heritage, right? I spoke it to David Mulligetta, who's also, he's an agent. He's, you know, African. You know, we've had different people of Nigerian descent on the show as well. And they talk about the importance of success, the importance of education. When you come from a place with nothing, a lot of times the reason you want to be in the United States is to give the next generation of your namesake an opportunity they didn't have. How much was that stress to you about getting your education, being successful, being a certain type of young man as part of that heritage as well?
Definitely. I think there was a lot of, you know, internal motivation within that aspect. I mean, my grandparents, like you were saying, I mean, my grandpa was in the Civil War, you know, came over here to, like you said, make a better life for his kids. I think they grew up with a lot more strict, like, you know, Nigerian doctor, lawyer, or, you know, do those things, or, you know, to be successful in those things. But for me, like, my grandparents were really, you know, kind of, there was never really a stress of, you know, make sure you're a doctor or lawyer or anything like that. They just wanted me to be successful. I think they probably cooled down a little bit from being in America.
Hey, sometimes you get tired, Coach. Hey, by the time you done raised a lot of kids, you're like, shit, this is my grandkid.
Start rubbing them knees.
Yeah, I'm a love on this baby.
Yeah. Well, their firstborn son is a lawyer, and their firstborn daughter is a doctor, so they got their first two, and they were like, okay, I guess. Yeah.
We've done enough, right?
So, yeah, but, you know, within my parents, within my pops, like, my pops always stressed just, like, do the best you can do in everything, every aspect of your life, mm-hmm. and, you know, for me, a lot of my life, that's been football or sport and education, so within my heritage, within my family, we always, the Igbos, man, we love knowledge, and we like to pride ourselves on being smarter than other people, so, you know.
Y'all don't mind saying it either.
They don't care now.
Yeah.
So it kind of, you know, freely flowed with that way, and kind of, you know, just was instilled in me kind of naturally, which I was super grateful for.
Yeah, let's go back to summers in Provo, Utah.
Yeah.
You've obviously, you know, talked about your Nigerian heritage and the way that those things have fueled you. But a lot of times we need experiences to teach us work. We need people to help us learn how to work. And that work is a requirement, right? Work isn't something that you get to choose to do. It's not a luxury. For you, your grandfather taught you that. Talk a little bit about those summers going back to Provo, Utah, and what they taught you.
Oh, man. They taught me a lot. And, you know, shout out to my pops for, you know, having the insight to send me to my, you know, grandpa's farm. Because, you know, at that young age, I was like, man, what? I'm not trying to go to the farm. Like, I seen the farm is fun. When I would go as a kid, I'll go ride four-wheelers and, you know, mess around a bit. So when I got older and I was going to work, I was like, uh-oh, like, this is going to be different. But it was a lot of fun. Like, but it was also a very teach you lessons. Going there in the summers, you know, like farming, it's just like no joke. Like taking care of animals, like when that's your job, like that's what, you know, puts food on the table. Like it's different because Like, you dealing with living creatures. Like, it's not like any other job where you just, you know, type on the computer and then it's done and you don't have to worry about anything. Like, my grandpa was waking up at 5 a.m., staying up till, you know, till 11 at night, like, just feeding these animals, taking care of them from the birthing processes to shoveling their crap from, you know, from pen to pen, from feeding them these ton weighing animals that eat about a bale of hay a day. Like, yeah. It's just different. Like, the work is the work. And there's just no room for excuses or else, you know, the whole thing crumbles. So, you know, being there with him, working on that farm, you know, and that, just having to do the work was like super humbling and like super thought provoking on like, wow, like, you know, you really gotta go get it. Like, I never seen my grandpa complain. I never see him say, you know, oh, I hate having to do this. I mean, he'll let out a groan every now and then when a cow does something dumb, but you know, that kind of taught me the mindset, like, the work is the work, like you were saying, like, yeah. To go get it, like, to feed your family, to take care of your loved ones, it is what it is.
It taught you to grind.
Taught me to grind, 100%, 100%. And I had, you know, so many mentors in my life that, you know, taught me that lesson as well. But at that young age, like, you know, it really connected with me to see my grandpa, like, he was probably in his 50s, maybe 60s at this time, grinding, like, every morning, grinding. And like I said, never hearing them complain, like, and then come home, treat my grandmother with respect. Like, it was just crazy to see that as a young age and was like, man, if he's doing this at 60, like, you know, I got a life of work ahead of me, boy.
You gotta get it.
I gotta go get it. Yeah.
The thing that your grandfather did to sort of have enjoyment and relaxation was felt like more work to me. You know, he'd get on his bike.
Yeah.
And he'd get on his bike and he'd ride for miles. One day though, on that bike, he had an accident that changed his life.
Right.
Saw the special on ESPN. You know, he can't see you, but he says he knows when Rome is doing something well. He's like, right. Rome did this,
right.
Rome did that. He understands when everybody else cheers, you know, it's time to cheer. And you mentioned the respect he treated your grandmother with, which is probably why it's really easy for her to raise and lower his chair, for her to tell him what you're doing. How much did seeing such a strong man, someone that taught you so much, how much did his accident and the injuries from it affect you?
Oh, it affected me greatly for sure. You know, well, firstly, just seeing my mom in pain, like, you know, like that's something, my family has been tremendously blessed to be very healthy, but, you know, when that happened to him, it was like, dang, like that was kind of first thing where it's like, you know, close to death, where you like a family member passing, where something happens to a family member that you can't, you know, there's no, you know, something you could rub on it, like it just happened. You have to, you know, deal with it emotionally. So, you know, just being there for my mom, you know, and seeing her cry was tough, but it was tough because, like you said, like it would be that way. This hardworking man, that what he does for fun is go on a bike and work hard some more, right? Like, it's interesting. That just shows you who he was. But for me, it was tough because the hardest thing that I wrestle with is like, man, he put in all this work, he never complained, he never did anything. For him to just be doing something that he enjoyed and for that to happen to him after all these years, like, it was just like, man, like, he didn't deserve it, you know what I mean? Like, I envision, you know, he retired from the farm, he goes and, you know, watches the Tour de France and rides his bike, you know, across the Everglades or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I envision for him because that's what he deserved, you know, after working that hard. So. To see him in that state, it was like, dang, like, it's just like something, you know, you just, you know, have to come to terms with and, you know, ask God to pray on him and to guide him and to love up on him and bless him. So it was tough, but yeah, it's an honor to be able to, you know, have him listen and to the games and, you know, and enjoy it in that way, hopefully bring him some excitement in his life. Yeah. But yeah, it was hard, man.
Those stories, just listen to your foundation, your family's foundation, and how you speak of the summers in Provo and hearing you talk about your grandfather, what he does for fun. All of that explains why you were still on that field doing the L drill.
Yeah.
All of that goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. I love that for you. Football comes easy to you.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've been playing it for a long time, ever since I was six. I think, you know, it's integrated into who I am, you know, the lessons that it teaches you and, you know, the adversity that you go through. Like, I'm a big advocate for just football. Like, if you play sports, you know, in football specifically, for me, it teaches you things about life. So for me, I think it's integrated into who I am, to why I'm on this earth, to my purpose. And, you know, I think it has created, you know, this person that abides by its rules, right? You know, and the adversity that it brings. So, but yeah, I mean, put in a lot of work to get here. I mean, it comes naturally to all y'all as well. So I know y'all know the feeling.
But Bishop Gorman, like, what the hell they feeding y'all? Like, we did a thing for Nike not right. too long ago.
Man, yeah. Listen, they everybody. Over there cheating. Yeah, they
what's
the y'all over there cheating.
What's the secret sauce?
That's weight room. Bro, they over there cheating, yeah, man. Come on, man. That's a damn college.
Like, what's yeah. the secret sauce, man? Like, yeah. that program is put together, but every kid you look at
right.
isn't Kobe's cousin.
Oh, yeah.
The
I
Hooper.
Think so. Yeah.
They don't even know. Yeah.
It sounds like Snoop Dogg's son was there for a little bit, so I'm like, okay, yeah. Bro,
nah, you can say anybody go to Bishop Gorman. You know, Mike Tyson's oldest son is the lead number one boxer in the world. He goes to Bishop. Yeah,
he was in my English class.
I mean, y'all, they're stacked, and all those kids going D1 somewhere yeah. crazy. Like, what's the secret sauce?
I think of just how hard it is. Like, it's hard. Like, those summers, like in Vegas, like, you know, there's yeah. no, they don't have no indoor now. Like, it's hard. Like, you grinding on that, you know, in 115, the turf probably 130, 135. I don't even know if it's legal. It's hard. Like, it's hard. Like, they make you wear the white shirt unless you got your 225 bench. You know what I mean? Like, there's a progression with everything. Like, everything is goal orientated. And, you know, when I was there, it was like, it is tough because it's like, at that young age, like, you know, it's like militant, you know, going mm-hmm. through it and, you know, being around so much talent, like the stress and all the different things. So it builds you for the moment, I think, mm-hmm. going through those things emotionally, you know, and physically. Of course, the weight room and them boys is big. But it's funny because, like, I'm from Vegas and I didn't know about Gorman until I was finishing my eighth grade year. Like, I was like, oh, where should I go play football? The school I'm zoned for is pretty trash. Like, if I'm really trying to go do this thing, like, I probably should go to Gorman. My parents, you know, worked their asses off to make that happen for me. But mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, people are like, y'all recruiting, y'all biggest. I'm like, man, this was, you know, 20 yeah. minutes from my career, so right. I don't know, like, what yeah. they do. But, yeah, it's just hard. I think it's just so tremendously hard that when you come out of it, like, you know, college comes easy.
You still got the stick shift Honda joint or no?
I still got the stick shift Honda joint. My brother had it in Butte when he was at JUCO. I think it's back at the crib now. Yeah, that thing, it used to roll up next to the Ferraris at Gorman. I was like, yeah. Yeah, you don't want none of that stick chip on me.
Bro, those powerhouses, that it works. Because we got IMG in South right. Florida. Every state has one of them, like, that right. powerhouse school. Like, it was cool listening to you talk about Gorman because it's like, we were grind. Like, you saw what you had to do to grind. Those powerhouse things work in your mind.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, if you had a son or someone that you was recommending to go to, you know, somewhere in high school, like, I mean, it just builds you for it because you got to work. Like, you know what I'm saying? You got high expectations and, you know, I don't know why, you know, it's so competitive or why it has gotten to that way, but that's how it is. Like, all those IMG, Modern Day out here, St. John Bosco, you know, Gorman, like, man, you grind, like, for real, you grind. And it has its benefits, of course, and it has its fun as well.
You about to be a millionaire, yeah. nigga. Like, that's, yeah, I bet you.
The benefit.
What? You, right. top 10, right. bro. Like, yeah. Yeah, that the grind is right. where it is. Yeah. And then now you're going to, Gorman made you, but you're going to make Gorman look so good
yeah. right.
after
yeah.
the draft. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think that right. what, symbiotic relationship, I got big words.
Ooh.
Like, RC. That symbiotic relationship is what it is. Yeah, yeah, but those powerhouses, that's why I was asking, because I went to,
right.
yeah, we won four games, and we had a parade around the school, 4-6, and had a parade around the school, so, like, we had powerhouses in Atlanta, but that powerhouse thing works, that's cool.
Okay,
that, yeah.
yeah.
That, it's cool for me to hear you talk about yeah. being at that top
school. Yeah, no, it definitely works, and like I said, teaches you how to grind for sure, but I love, like, the only thing I have about it is, like, then it creates, you know, not, like, opportunities for probably schools that you went to. Like, when scouts are coming to Vegas, like, they're like, go to Gorman if you want to find somebody good. But, man, there's talent all over the valley. So it's like, and if you're good, you know, you'll probably end up, they'll find you. But the only thing I don't like about it is, you know, it creates that, like, spotlight when, you know, there's talent in all the valleys, especially, shit, Atlanta. That was,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, you committed to Washington. What is it? Chris Peterson leaves.
Yeah.
At some point, Jimmy Lake,
mm-hmm.
he leaves. You stay.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity out of high school to go anywhere in the country you wanted to. You had these chances before you got on campus. You had a chance while on campus to transfer. What was it about Washington that you wanted to stay true to your commitment And especially after, I think it was the 2021 year,
right,
4-8 or something like that. What was it that made you want to stay true to your commitment to Washington and turn that program around?
You know, initially when I had gone in, it was pretty good when I was going in before COVID already. But for me, I think I envisioned like going someplace and like, you know, improving it and turning it, you know, or leaving it as something that was like, you know, on the up and up, or that, you know, while I was there was on the up and up. Like, of course I could go to, you know, Bama and we would probably win 12 games, 11 games a year, but like, and probably do the same things and have a lot of success. But for me, I want to be a part of something that was like growing and building with my teammates and with everybody. And I think when I was there for 2 years, like being there with the people, like I was integrated in it, like Pacific Northwest, they got their own culture now, like, and when you're in it, like, you're in it. And I think I was really, you know, proud to be here, be there, and, you know, I think I'm a, you know, loyal guy by nature, so I made the promise to them, to be there for 4 years on my letter of intent. I mean, I had to get re-recruited. I'm not gonna sit here and say, yeah, I was just down for it. I was, regardless of what happened, whatever coach, you know, but with Coach DeBoer coming in, Coach Shep, like all them boys, I was, you know, re-recruited, and, you know, I sat in those meetings for hours talking with them, trying to figure it out. And, you know, my family was, you know, pulling me different directions as well, saying, you know, we have this, or let's go do this, you know, somewhere else. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just felt like, there was a place for me after, you know, looking at their offense, looking at the different things, and felt like we could have a lot of success.
I mean, good decision, right? Yeah. You break the school record for yards, third in Pac-12 history.
Went crazy.
It went crazy. third in Pac-12 history.
Reggie Williams don't like that. we're on a group chat. He said, my young homie went crazy, but I don't like that. Yeah. Crazy.
Reggie, that's my guy, man. He inspired me. Legendary. Yeah.
Two-time All-American, right? Which is huge, because you said the Pac-12 is often overlooked and underrated, but you made sure that you made your stamp. When you look at the guys in the league now, who are some of the cats that you watch and kind of compare your game to?
There's really three. I like to watch Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen, and Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. I say Devontae Adams, I mean, I watch all his game, but I specifically watch his releases. Like, I mean, you can't touch the dude right now, man. Like, I've yet to see a DB, like, really get in Devontae Adams', you know, grill for, like, a few years now. So, you know, just trying to perfect that split release for me is really important in perfecting that. Keenan Allen, because we're similar size and his route running is, like, you know, ridiculous. So I'm, like, you know, trying to look at his hips and, you know, how he's dropping and getting in and out of breaks and stuff. And then I watched a lot of Julio Jones because he, like, one of the best at, you know, the catch point. Like, you know, regardless of where he's at, regardless of position, like, Julio, you know, he's going to go and get it. So, three of those guys. But I would say if I just had to pick one, I would say Devontae Adams.
Yeah, well, you also said, though, you were more athletic than Tay. You said it. You were working out. You was working out. And you said,
what did he say?
He said he like, because at this time he said he watched Tay, because I set him up. It's the setup. It's the pivot. You feel me? Yeah. It's the pivot on him. He said he watched Tay and Cooper Kupp, right? Yeah. And he was like, and I'm more athletic than those guys too.
Bro, than Tay?
Yo.
Like, you a dog, bro.
He was working out. He was working out. I think he had a little adrenaline going.
I may have. I was not my right mind now. I'm right there with him. Like, I don't know what, you know, I don't know how you can measure it exactly, but man, I seen his play. He's silky smooth, and
I think both of their 100 times are better than yours, by the way, from high school.
What'd y'all run?
Fred ran a 7.2. This motherfucker was fly.
Hey, brother. It was also the 100 yards back when Fred ran.
Yeah, Fred, he ran on grass.
I ran 100 meters. These guys, my brothers, they always fucking with me about my age. But no, in 100 meters, I went 10.2.
Oh.
How much you weigh, Freddie T?
I was 212 then.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, 10.29, though. It was a 10.3 base, but 10.29.
Yeah, I went under 11.
He went under 11.
He got you.
He got me. Yeah,
he got you.
I'm on 10-6. I ain't gonna lie about 10-2. That's crazy. Yeah,
nah, I was slow. I ran the quarter. I just go hold it.
No, we good. Straight stride. He ran the third leg. Ran the 80 yards.
I was first on the 4x1. But
even with that, you know, from high school to Washington, and now to the NFL, got to be a beautiful feeling knowing that you'll be drafted. Have you gotten your suit picked out? You got all your shit together for draft night? Are you going to the draft?
I'm planning on it. Yeah, yeah. I just figured out I got like 9 in the green room, so I've been trying to, you know, make sure I got all my people straight. But yeah, I got measured for my suit. I don't have the exact suit yet. I'm still working on getting exactly how I want it. But I got ideas. I got
ideas. Shoot me a text. That's what I do.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to
don't wear one of them double-breasted button things that he wears.
Yeah, I ain't gonna wear nothing crazy. I ain't gonna be the dude that's on Twitter afterwards like, what did he wear? Like, you know what I'm saying?
See, but even more so, like you mentioned the green room and the dude that's on Twitter, there was a moment where we were talking about Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to New York. I knew I was gonna be the first or second back taken. I didn't go to New York because I didn't want to be that guy in the green room looking like, damn,
right?
I ain't drafted yet. I ain't. But luckily for me, I went 9th, so about an hour and a half. Into the, about an hour and a half.
See what he do?
I mean.
All right, see, man, you want to go grab a drink or something?
Man. About an hour and a half. Well, actually, what we're going to do is we're going to cut the room off this way.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Because if we're talking about the draft,
yeah,
and we just paying our seat back because anytime somebody comes on the show that has won a champion, a Super Bowl,
yeah,
he cuts the room off.
Okay.
And just kind of line his himself up
right
with that person.
Okay.
Now we're talking about experiences. We're going to cut
night.
It. Cut
draft
it off
night,
this
RC
way.
He went to Chuck E. Cheese.
We love RC. You know what I'm saying? We'll get back to that. But no, I just say because I didn't want to be like, I was just like, damn, I'm scared and nervous. And then Channing had an experience where he was projected to go from 20th to 32 to the Patriots. And
I didn't go to 70. Mm. So I was drafted first round, All-American, everything, first round. And I got arrested a couple times.
Okay, so they got
you know, I had a little less structure than you have.
Right.
But yeah, and injuries and stuff. And I went third round. Mm. So I'm sitting there watching the first round, jacked up. We out there fishing. I got this thing on. I got my homeboys out there. We drinking. We having a good time. And then 32nd, the Patriots pick because they won the Super Bowl the year before, and I didn't go first round. And that shit crumbled me.
Right.
Fuck that, man. Let's go home.
Yeah.
Got up and whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
yeah.
To Freddie's point, like that experience. Are you ready for that? I don't know what that stress is gonna be. He ain't wait till 9. This motherfucker waited a week and a half. I had to wait, bro. I think the draft started at noon back then. I didn't get drafted until like 8:30 at night. So I had to go through
they did the first three rounds.
Wow. That
same
was the first
day. Oh, they did the same day. Okay.
Eight and a half hours I waited to get drafted. What are you gonna do with that time? Like, how are you gonna deal with that time? Sitting there to Freddie's point, man, because what is it, Brady Quinn was sitting there, Aaron Rodgers was sitting there for hours. Like that time, like
Joey Porter Jr. last year sat through the entire first round.
Yeah.
Without the first round. Will Levis, same thing.
Yeah, Will Levis, yeah. Man, I mean, I don't even know if I'm prepared for that. Y'all scared.
He's scared. He's like, you know what? Afterwards, he could be like, man, you know what, Troy? We gonna go
I'm
to
stay
the home.
It's
Vegas.
My grandmama cooking.
But I mean, it's interesting. I mean, because you either go to the draft and that could happen to you, or you at the house with all your family, and it's like we all just waiting. You just like, even though it's your family, it's still like, dang, like, you know, I got everybody here and
cameras everywhere. Still.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's still either you can't escape it. So, you know, it's something. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, if worst comes, I'm at least, you know, get drafted somewhere, right? And I'll be happy with that, right? Like if I get drafted, you know, but. So keeping that in mind that, you know, you are still getting drafted, like, you know.
Bro, I got to ask, because that NIL stuff is crazy.
That's why he don't have a Honda no more.
I had to ask, bro. I don't understand, because we talked to Angel Reese. We talked to a number of young athletes. I think Angel make? $8 million?
It's more than I make.
Oh, mom.
Not
like
eight.
It's three.
Yeah. $3 million, whatever. There are college students making more money than I made in a year playing in the league.
Right.
You were a part of NIL.
Yeah.
Bro, how much money did you make in college?
Channing.
This guy.
Bro, I need to ask the man how much money he made.
I'm going to check a bitch pockets.
Check that man pockets. Ask him about the experience.
I don't care about the experience. I want to know how much money he made in college because I'm jealous that I couldn't make money in college.
Yeah.
Bro, like y'all are going to the league now as millionaires. Are you a millionaire right now?
No, I'm not a millionaire. You know, some people like Angel Reese making $3 million is crazy. Like people aren't making a lot of money, but I think it's awesome. Like, you know, just the fact that you know, kids are starting to get paid. I think it was a little tougher dynamic, like, and I think, you know, as years go on, it's new, so this will kind of go away. But it was hard, like, having a freshman come in, mm-hmm. I can get this, you know, $1 million contract, or, I mean, not, we don't, that really, get, like, that really go down with us, other places. Yeah. But, like, and I'm next to a 5-year guy who walked on, who, you know, who yeah. has been busting his ass for right. 5 years now, who yeah. not getting a penny, right? And, you know, it turns it more into a business, of course. And but I think, you know, as it goes, as freshmen come in, like, you know, it was hard having that dynamic, right? But as the years go on, as NIL continues, you know, everybody will eventually be getting, you know, I'm sure something, right, to go with it. I'm hoping that eventually it'll turn into some sort of percentage of the TV money, because that's where the real, you yep. know, bread is at. Like, right now, they just
the hoping for,
yeah, the collective, yeah. the donors, and the donors are tired, man. Like, yeah. unless you feel over there at, you know, the place I don't say. our rival.
Beat him twice.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, it's tough for them.
The NIL and college turning into a business doesn't mean it's the pros.
Yeah.
The pros is different. It's yeah. it's what you're now gonna be paid for something and do it professionally when you would have did it for free. And right. you have done it right. for free. This is supposed to be an historic wide receiver draft.
Yeah.
You know, there's Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, both went to my alma mater, LSU. You know, you have you and just guys on guys on guys. Where does Rome Odunze stack up when you look at this group? A lot of people felt like you could have won the Biletnikoff.
Right.
You know, it was three great choices
right.
in that. When you look at this draft class, which I do believe as well could be historic when it pertains to the wide receiver position, is Rome Odunze the best wide receiver in this draft?
I believe so. I do. I think I'm the best wide receiver in the draft. Just, you know, just because my versatility, who I am as a player, I think when you turn on the tape, like, I don't see anything that, you know, is missing, you know, compared to, you know, the other guys or something that they have that I don't, or, you know, and vice versa. They're tremendous players as well. And, you know, it's not like there's a gap between this person and this person. I'm like, man, we all right there. But, you know, I just see myself, you know, at the tippy top just because of the film, you know, what's on there, you know, what I'm capable to do, what I've been able to do for a couple years now. And the skills that I have that I think will project very well into the league. But but it's awesome, like, just to be a part of it, right? Like, I mean, this why we, not, I mean, just top three, like, you know, of course me, Marvin and Nabers are crazy too, but, like, I mean, you got Xavier Worthy, who just ran 4.421. You yeah. got you know AD, you got, you know, Xavier from South Carolina, you got my boy
Lad McConkey was out there skiing.
Lad McConkey, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You got the signature
I know what you mean.
Signature you know what I mean?
We got it.
But hey, but he a baller though.
No, he can go. Like,
no,
he works hard.
No, oh, my he can God. Actually play. He can actually play. You were in the wide receiver room with Puka, right?
That's right, yeah.
When Puka was at Washington, man, and he transfers to BYU, did y'all know he was like that?
Oh, yeah. We knew Puka was like that.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, he was going against Trent McDuffie and Kyler Gordon. Kyler Gordon, who, I mean, Trent McDuffie, in my opinion, might be the best.
Went crazy.
Best corner in the league. Like, he's tough. So he was going against them, and, like, he would win. Like, he would win a lot. So when we came in, like, it was hard for us to first come in and, like, really, you know, get jiggy on Trey and Kyler. Like, we developed, and we started to get better, right? But when we came in, like, he was doing people left and right, you know, catching this, catching there, and he's a dog. Like, like, he was the one that taught us, like, to go smack a DN or, you know, go block a linebacker. So we knew he was him. He had to struggle with some injuries, like with his foot and stuff. So, you know, in that system, it was hard for any of us to have success my first 2 years. It was rough, but, man, oh, yeah, I knew he was a dog. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I mean, then he went to BYU and did the same thing, like, same sort of play style, going up and taking it out of the air. So, yeah, for sure.
Really?
We knew Puka was like that.
I wish I'd have knew.
Now, I'm not going to say I knew he was 1,500 break the receiver record right. cold, but I knew he was like that.
Right.
Sure. Going back to draft night really quick, right? And draft gets crazy. It gets real fucking crazy. Let's just fantasize for a moment. Do you know who had a 13th pick?
Who is it? 13th? I don't know who has a 13th. Is that a...
Your hometown.
Oh, is it the Raiders? Raiders got 13th?
The Raiders.
Okay.
Would it be special if you had an opportunity to get drafted by an amazing coach in Antonio Pierce to the Raiders, be able to go back home and play on the other side of, opposite Devontae Adams?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, just because, you know, I could really tell him to his face, like, I'm a better athlete than
He gonna have one target
again. I'm gonna text it right now.
Don't cut that and make it seem like I was for real. Don't do that.
Hey, that's gonna be the promo.
Don't do that.
On the thumbnail.
Don't do that.
Roma Dunze says he's more athletic than Devontae Adams.
And then he's gonna put the Terminator mask on. That's what he does.
Yeah, kill me. Yeah, that boy. I've seen him on the court. He's crazy. He's freaky athletic. But yeah, I think it would be awesome just because I really think he's a tremendous coach, Pierce. Like to be behind, you know, Devontae Adams and learn from him. Like that's exactly like how I've, you know, matured as a receiver my whole career. Like Gorman and Gorman, I had, you know, Speedy Naylor and different guys come ahead of me at UW, like you guys were saying, I Puka, right. And you know, Terrell Bynum, and a couple guys in front of me who were ballers as well. So it would be just in the same kind of way coming in. You know, wanted to produce, of course. You know, I'm not, you know, there to just sit around, but you know, to be able to learn from him, be in the same room as him, be able to, you know, develop and see how, you know, he's been dominating for so long and follow his lead and play for my hometown. You know, my mom, I'll probably say my mama career, my whole rookie year. I ain't gonna lie, I'm cheap. But yeah, no, 100%.
Love it.
But don't you want to be the one? Like, I'm selfish. Right. I play for money. I would drive to Dolphin Stadium, say, shit, they give me 70 grand today. Shit, I'm about to go show out for this money. But like, as a receiver, would you want to go play behind a top guy? Because then targets are going to go. We were just joking about it, but your targets are going to go down.
Right.
All that's going to go down, you got to show out. I would compare you, I'm a Bucks fan, but with your catch radius and the stuff you do, you know, when the ball's in the air,
right.
I see a lot of Mike Evans in you, to be honest.
Okay, yeah.
I see a lot of Mike Evans with your catch radius. But wouldn't you want to be the number one as a receiver? Because we talk about it with Freddie and all these running back got by committee and all that.
Yeah.
But running back by committee doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You got to go be that dude.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. Nah, I definitely want to be regarded as the one, you know, wherever I end up, you know, hopefully through some development or as soon as I come in. But if I come to somewhere that, you know, that number one isn't already kind of in place, it's hard to come behind, you know, Devontae Adams and be like, yeah, I'm the one behind the Hall of Famer, right? Like, that would be ignorant. So I feel like, but for me, like, I'm in a unique situation where at UW, you know, we had three dogs. Like, we got three coming out this year, and we all saw ourselves as ones, you know what I mean? So I think it's important to have another guy in the room that, you know, has that competitive nature that you can, you know, push each other and and being behind a guy like that, like, you know, the wide receiver position, you run certain routes to get other wide receivers open. And I think, you know, with his intelligence, with mine as well, like, it would be a dynamic, you know, duo for us. Like, it would be hard to stop us, but I see it like that. You know, of course, you know, I think it would take some time for anybody to regard me as the one in that offense, right, you know, behind him. But that's the way I look at it. Like, of course, I want to be the one, but I want to bring the team success, you know what I mean, however I can.
That was actually my comp, obviously, for my job. I have to make comps. But it's always difficult, right, because we can't take Roma Dunze, who's going to be a top 10 pick, and compare him to somebody who's not a Hall of Famer. It just doesn't work like that. And it's always that high expectation when you say, yeah, you know, you look at his comp, he compares to Devontae Adams with his route running, his catch radius, the way he can use his body to shield guys.
Right.
But there's a story about you about going to the basketball team and asking to learn to box out as a freshman.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that mindset as a young man to say, you know what, this is something that isn't necessarily football that could help me be a better football player and going to seek that knowledge.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, I have to shout out one of my mentors, Junior Adams, and wide receiver coach. He was really the one who connected me with them and pushed me to go do that because, you know, he seen the potential in me. I obviously wasn't, you know, performing how I needed to, like, in his standards, and he wanted to, you know, continue to introduce new things to me to have that success. So I was, like, all for it. I mean, I thought I was going to go over there and, you know, get my handles right, get my shot back right, and do those things. So I think, you know, the, like, releases do translate to basketball crazily. But when we went over there, shout out Will Conroy. He, you know, took me under his wing and was just, you know, teaching me a little bit about it, and I was over there, you know, those coaches on those levels, you know, they're all mentors. They all have good words. So I was, you know, in there breaking it down with them, like listening to Coach Hopkins and stuff like that. But yeah, I was doing like box out drills and different things, like to, you know, hopefully like translate. Like, you never know, you know. At that time, I was still unsure of, you know, how my playing style was going to be. I knew how I had it, but You know, I was still figuring out, you know, how to dominate and how to do those things. So I was just trying new things. I think I would encourage, like, a lot of guys. Like, I used to wear a mesh bag over my head, like, to lock in my focus and different things over my helmet. Like, I was just trying new things. Like, you know, you never know what it is that's going to make it click for you. Like, oh, it's just like that. And for me, it definitely helped. It wasn't like a eureka moment, like, oh, I got to box them out and go get it. Like, there's never a moment in football where you just, you know,
you get it,
boxing out and like, oh, give me that. It's similar, but, you know, you're always in motion. So just kind of taking some of those things and trying to translate it, I think, was, you know, a big part of it. And just trying to do whatever it was to, you know, try and improve and try and, you know, have that click.
Well, that whatever it was turns into a historic year for Washington. You guys win the Pac-12, beat Oregon twice in two amazing football games. Semifinal against Texas was crazy.
Right.
You guys pull out the win. It stopped short against Michigan, but it doesn't take away from what you accomplished. You go from 4-8 2 years ago to this point. A big part of that, though, man, was Michael Penix Jr.
Absolutely. You
know, who didn't win the Heisman, but just created great memories, but had all-time college football quarterback moments at Washington.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about what he was able to bring to Washington and how you see him as a quarterback and a leader.
When he came in, man, that you felt the shift, you know what I mean? Like, I was watching film and I was unsure. I was just like everybody else. He was just coming off of injuries, and, you know, I was like, dang, he just came off of injuries, and, you know, I wonder if he's gonna, you know, be the same, because I was watching his film. That was one of the big reasons I was like, oh, I'm gonna come back. They was putting on his film from Indiana. Boy, that boy was still doing what he was doing. He liked that. I was like, I was trying to keep it cool. I was like, yeah, that's a good play, good play. I'm like, damn, like, killing these mugs. So when he came in, man, he brought that leadership. He brought that passion. Like, he from Florida. He real family dude. So, you know, he brought us all together in the locker room, you know, as a team, as individuals into a collective, right? We did all that. And then when it came to field, man, it just comes naturally to him. Like, I think he's the best quarterback in the draft. I really do. It just what he's capable of doing, like, and what he was able to do, and the adversity that he's gone through, like, he's built for it. You know, he was a Heisman contender at Indiana when he beat Penn State with the little, you know, diving, you know, controversial ending, right? Yeah. You know, to having two injuries, everybody forgot of him. Nobody, you know, was talking about Michael Penix, and then to come back, have two amazing years again, like, to continue doing what he's doing. Yeah, he has room to improve just like any other player, but for me, like, his skill set is just unmatched, you know. And I think he's going to bring that exact sort of flavor, exact sort of leadership to any team that he's going to.
I need you to put an end to an urban legend, though.
Okay.
Was he really freestyling 100%. During the game?
He was really freestyling in the game.
All right, it's the most important moment of the Oregon game.
Yeah.
I think y'all were down, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we were down.
So who in the hell started the beat?
Probably J-Mac, probably Jalen McMillan. He was probably.
So
you know,
really, so Michael Penix Jr. is freestyling.
He was freestyling about us going to make the comeback. Like, it was crazy. Like, he was freestyling about what we were about to go do, and then we went and did it. Like, that was crazy that they caught it. Like, it was.
You talking about?
No, bro. He's on the sideline.
You talking about somebody started?
Yes, and he's on the bench, like, spitting, like, about us about to go on. We about to be on the field in, like, a minute and a half. Like, defense is on the field. Like, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy, bro.
Wow.
Like, that was before I made that catch. Like, before he threw me that catch. That was before that.
On that catch, when you watch the play, you know, and you done now. Like, your coach left here at Alabama. You can tell us, like, the real story now. You said that you weren't even a part of the play.
Right.
And you can see Mike look at you. He gives you sort of like a palm down or a fist down.
Right.
Throws the sort of back shoulder for the TD. Just an amazing play that I'm sure, you know, you'll always remember. I know no UW fan will forget it.
Right.
But to have a quarterback who you believe in that much, believe in you in that way, that we're going to go against the play. And a lot of times, I always say it, sometimes, man, in the biggest moments, it's players over plays.
Yeah.
UW's two best made a play. When you're in that moment, you're on the line of scrimmage, guy right in front of you, and you get that signal, what goes through your mind?
Oh, I mean, I'm the type, like, when I'm on the field, when I'm in a play, I'm really, like, locked in on just executing the play that I'm in. Like, I feel like I'm good at that. Like, I don't linger on things. Like, whenever I'm on the field, like, that's why I feel like my recall isn't as good as a lot of players, because I'm, like, really, like, play to play, like, really locked in. So when it happened, I was like, you know, I knew I was on the, whenever I was on those, you know, on the backside, I wasn't the main concept, but, you know, I had a hitch conversion on there, so I could run a hitch if he's playing off. I can run a fade if he's playing press. So anytime they play press, I'm like, oh, or any, if they're way off too, I'm like, okay, it's a possibility. So, you know, sometimes I look back at Mike, even though I already know what I'm doing, just to confirm and see what he's thinking. And, you know, when he gives me that, like you said, it's, I mean, when that quarterback has the belief in you, like, it's just, I mean, it's a snap. It's you and the quarterback, right? Like, that's a special thing to have, and I think that's what brought me a lot of success and him success as well in those type of moments. We was able to do it consistently the whole year. It's just like, you know, you can have all the talent, you can have all, you know, the, everything to get the play done, but it's about the belief in each other. Like, okay, when I throw this ball, he's gonna go take it, and okay, when I run this route, he's gonna put this ball right in the money. Like, to have that connection, like, I feel like that's what really was the determining factor in us continually being able to have success on those back shoulder plays and him believing in me and me believing in him.
Man, that reminds me so much of Brady Moss, 07. They came, they tore our ass up. That was the 17-1 they lost to the Giants.
Yeah.
But I'm standing there, and they see we in cover one, and he look out at Moss, and Brady started smiling, and I knew he was in trouble. Because you know that connection, right? Like, Brady gonna put it right where Moss can go get it, and right, that thought of that is special. How much does that happen to a receiver come? Because, you know, bro, cover four, corners on receivers. Cover three, corners on receivers. Cover one, corners on receivers. Like, this corner has to cover you sooner or later. Like, you can have a little safety help inside, but sooner or later, this. How much did that happen last year with just staying Penix being great as you is, you being one of the top receivers, All-American in the league, where y'all can just look at each other and be like, bro, I'm going to go get that thing.
Yeah.
I got you.
For sure, definitely. I mean, like, the Oregon was definitely one of those times. There was a couple times during Oregon State. It was super rainy, and, you know, I was body catching everything because it was slipping through our hands. So I was one of a secure option for him in that game. So it happened that game as well. But definitely, like, looking over, like, it wasn't, like, you know, as cold-blooded as that. Like, look over. Like, yeah, like Brady and Moss. But it was still like, yeah,
Moss had
like
20,
that, or, you know, something like that. You know what I mean?
Moss had 26 that year.
23, 26, something.
Brady had 50. Yeah. But I'm talking about, he would look out, and he smiled at him. I'm standing in Hard Rock Stadium. I'm looking at Brady. They see me in cover one. He look out. He look at Moss. Moss gave him that little country ass nod Moss give him, and Brady says, and he starts smiling. Yeah. And I said, boy, we in trouble. There ain't nothing we can do. Right. And that joker went up. He had, I think Moss had two that game, three that game. Just jump balls in the end zone.
Taking him.
Bro, Moss 6'6", arm 3 feet. So he already had 10 feet, and he had a 40-inch vertical.
He's going 6'6"?
No, Channing exaggerates.
He's 6'11".
He's 6'4".
He's 6'14".
He's...
No, he's special. And Tom's even more special. Tom will do little stuff. If I have a check down, he snapped the ball. He said, Freddie, swing. Like, right in the middle of the play. Yeah, he's a special. He's the GOAT, for real. But I'm curious, because I played ball for 26 years.
Right.
And when you mentioned the mesh bag over your head, I've never seen or heard that.
Right.
When did it start? How did it start? Who introduced it? Do more of your teammates, did they all do it? Or was it just
your thing? I know they thought he was strange.
Definitely thought I was strange. For
like the mesh bag, like what you put your your clothes in.
Yeah, like, you know, the laundry.
I know what you're talking about.
Laundry.
I think it's ludicrous.
Yeah, well, shout out to Coach Adams again. He was the one who introduced that to me as well. I think he just wanted me to develop and, it was just really for focus. Like, when you have that bag over your head, like, you know, you have to, like, locate the ball and make sure you're seeing it. So it really did help me. It was crazy how it helped me. Like, I would wear it before practice, like, every day for I think I did it
just
for all
the fall machine,
camp. Yeah, I would be on the jugs machine, you know, going through practices, like our little warm-up routes with the quarterbacks and stuff. So, it just helped me with my focus, I think. I've never seen it before after that either. But it's just one of those things, like I said, like going, you know, to the basketball team, just like doing different things. Like, you just never know, like, what's gonna click for you and what's gonna really help you improve. So, like, if you ever, like, catching jugs and everything is nice, but, like, I feel like, you know, if you're trying to make improvements, you got to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation. Like, I could go catch 100 balls in the jug, and I feel like I'm like, did I get any better at catching the football? You know what I mean? Like, is it just rhythm at that point? Like, when you mess up the rhythm, when you throw like a little wrench in the plans a little bit, like a mesh bag over your head, like, I feel like it just introduces your brain to a new challenge. You know what I mean?
They're going to laugh at you in the pros.
Yeah, you got to wait until you start balling before you do that, before you bring it out.
I got a little leather mask that I wear.
Oh, that's my gosh. No, mine. See, I knew you was. Yeah. I seen some clips,
he
man.
He's seen it.
I was wondering when,
you
man.
Know, you're young, man. We try to let him get a little older before that. We normally, and you know, if you've seen the show, we ask people about their biggest pivot. But I expect to have you back on the show.
Okay, cool.
At some point, so I'm not going to ask you. Okay. I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell the world what you tell the team. If I decide to make Rome Odunze an instant millionaire.
Right.
By drafting him to my team in the top 10.
Right.
I'm drafting him because I know who the player is, because right. The film says it. Tell me who the man will be inside those buildings.
I think a consistent man, you know, a genuine person, someone that's looking to, you know, uplift everybody around them. You know, I'm along this journey and I'm super grateful, but, you know, I didn't get here off of my own, you know, simply my own accord, right? Like I said, all my mentors, the people that, you know, have mentored me to get to this point and brought me so much success due to their hard work and support. I think that's how I'm entering the locker room. Like, man, I'm trying to be a guy who's bringing everybody else up, who, you know, is involved in the community, you know, is involved with the organization as a whole, you know, who is a face for the organization, as someone that, you know, this is the example player of who we want. You know, like you said, all the skills on the field as well, but going into the locker room as a leader, as a guy who, you know, other guys who can look to and say, you know, that's how it's done, that's how we should do business, not just, you know, with one another, but, you know, in life, you know, how we treat, you know, other people with respect, because I think, you know, we're in a unique position. You know, a lot of people sometimes feel entitled in those things, but, you know, I like to think of myself as just another guy. I just happen to be, you know, good at football, you know, mm-hmm. So I think, you know, a genuine person, like, you know, who you see in front of you is who you get, you know, all those interviews, different stuff that I went through, that's who you're getting, you know. I'm not, you know, changing anytime soon, so, yeah, I would say that, yeah.
Well, that's it, man. Can't wait to see what you do, bro.
Yeah, thank you, man.
I appreciate you, bro.
Yeah.
We'll see you in Detroit.
No doubt, man.
Yeah, we'll be out there.
High six figures, huh?
He said low.
All right,
man. He said low.
Nice to meet you, man.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Niggas send me cap in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up.